from Churchill Downs, Louisville. Kentucky Derby 149, now within a fortnight sight. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, statepick.com. Happy to be back in the Ville and happy to have gotten here in time for a spectacular thunder over Louisville. Now with new and improved, apparently, pyrotechnics and fireworks from Spain. That is the overwrap leading up to Derby this year. Apparently Spain is broken new ground in color presentation when it comes to . So if you watched or saw some highlights from Thunder, I think I mentioned this last week, and last year when Tina and I drove up from Sanibel, and then I sent her home from here, she got a chance to see Thunder, and she was appropriately blown away, and it is, I hadn't seen it in years, going back to when we used to come for barbecue and set up the stands all around the downs. And speaking of setting things up around the downs, everybody that is coming, whether you're coming just for opening night or for opening week, whether you're coming for Oaks and Derby or not, the reinvented and the reoriented, particularly the paddock area, it's going to take some getting used to, and it's going to be amazing. I'll put a picture up that I took yesterday. Kevin Kirstein took me around and showed me what's going on, and it's amazing what they've done. It'll be, 80%, 75%, give or take, complete for next week. And then as soon as Derby's over, they're going to press forward. But between the new stands on the first turn, which looks spectacular, whether it's this reoriented paddock and the openness, it's unbelievable. The administration building completely leveled, a pit essentially. They dug 7 feet down below plaza level, 7 feet, and so it's a sunken paddock, which will provide everybody with a much better view from around. And then the horseshoe-shaped stalls, 20 of them, 7 on the left and 13 on the right, and they're going to build in essentially a dining area, an enclosure up against the back of the stalls. We'll talk to Darren later, Darren Rogers with the invocation, as we say, every year. We'll talk to Darren in hour three. He's got, as usual, he's got plenty of things to keep him busy as Derby comes closer. I'm as always, whenever I get here and there's been one change after another, as they continue to just try to, let's be honest, maximize what this event can be. There's going to be something that didn't know about until yesterday. Out in the parking lot, essentially, they're going to take a page from the NFL and have a fan experience environment. Basically, where the Barbaro statue is, facing the main gate and near the Derby Museum. If you're facing the building from Central and from the grounds, that's to the left. Well, sort of in the center there, they basically have pushed out into the parking lot a little bit, and they're going to have this enclosed area that's going to be a fan experience environment. I see there's a stage going up, and there'll be food and so forth. And I imagine, much like Super Bowl and those kinds of concepts, that you don't necessarily have to have. I don't necessarily know if you need to have a ticket to get in the building, or if you can, you know, take part out there. That's the way. I know the NFL does it that way, right? You don't have to have. You're not going to have to have a Super Bowl ticket. I mean, so many people come to Super Bowls without tickets, with no intention of actually going to the game. So they just come and hang for the week and then go watch the game elsewhere, whether they stay in the host city or not. So anyway, there's going to be some revelations and interesting elements that are brought forth as we start our two-week run. Actually, more than 2 weeks, because we're staying after Derby, and I don't ever, other than back when we did barbecue, I don't ever remember staying much past Sunday. I'm going to say in the aughts, there might have been back in 06, 07, in that range, 08, may have stayed a couple of days on the back end, but it's been a long time, so we'll do the recapping of Derby Oaks weekend from here. And then we head to Nashville for the Iroquois. So that's the next, really, 3 weeks of activity. And then, of course, Baltimore. And there's plenty of news on the Baltimore front, in fact, because of some of the results from the weekend. Start to wade into the action and talk about. We got a lot of news to talk about. And, in fact, the first conversation and guest of the morning in about 8 minutes has... nothing to do with the results of the weekend, because in fact there were no results at all. We're of course hinting at what we were hinting at last Friday. If you were listening to the replay, you might have gotten wind that we kind of saw what was on the horizon at Laurel. Alan Foreman will join us. Tim Keefe, it was either going to be Alan or Tim. And Tim is training, and I imagine the raw emotion that is on display in the Maryland THA letterhead missive that Tim Keefe wrote to Michael Algio, the chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission. The situation at Laurel is dire. I don't think that's an unfair characterization. Don't need to get into too much here over these next few minutes, other than to say that, as we announced when the word came from the group text that comes out of the racing office, that racing was canceled for the weekend. They're then on a daily basis, as they evaluate the main track and plot a path forward. They're trying to get a card together for Laurel next Friday, or this Friday. They never closed entries yesterday after the horsemen essentially boycotted the entry box for the main track races. They entered for turf, but the racing office chose not to card anything for Thursday. They sent out a hatful of extras and races that were brought back for Friday. They did not close entries yesterday, hoping to put a card together, but in the meantime, we'll let Alan discuss where the horsemen stand. If you have not read Tim Keefe's extensive vocalization of concern and I would venture to say desperation on behalf of the horsemen and owners and jockeys over the situation with this Laurel main track that continues to be completely vexing and a constant at this point, reoccurrence. I mean, there's been one, I mean, basically they've been chasing issues on the main track now for, I mean, season after season after season. And there were, and again, I really should just turn this over to Alan in about 10 minutes. There were essentially conflicting versions of how this is unfolding from MJC, from the Maryland Jockey Club, with, you know, their release and their version of things versus the way the horsemen feel. So Alan will discuss it. The horsemen making seemingly the very viable suggestion of just moving things to Pimlico now and just racing at Pimlico, you know, immediately, and let the surface evaluations, let that go forward. First Racing and the MJC bringing Dennis Moore over from California, and Dennis is as respected as there is. The horsemen have countered with their own request that Frank Fast Track Passero, as he calls himself, have Frank Passero, who also, you know, has a long respected track surface, track super career and reputation, in tow, the horseman calling for Frank Passero to be brought in. So, in about 8 minutes, we'll let Alan form sort it out. meanwhile, we've got things to look forward to also today. We'll go down to Ocala in advance of the sale. Brandon Rice and Mark Broad, who I think, I think joined us last year too, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the year before. And we'll get a preview. They've actually got the third horse through the ring tomorrow, a Bolt Doro New York bred filly. So we'll catch up and we'll get a little bit more. You know, we did that even. We didn't have a whole lot of time at the end of the show Friday to talk. Was that Friday or Thursday? I can't even remember now. But I do want to say, I'm glad I went in this direction. The party yesterday that Jackie Demerick, that we had Jackie visit, and the Ocala Farm Ministry fundraiser last night, I got an update from Richard Kent. Close to $100,000 raised last night, and maybe they blew through the six-figure mark, but they were in the $95,000 fundraising mark last night. So thanks to everybody that responded, and apparently a lot of people that weren't going to get to OBS yesterday for the event apparently donated generously. So thanks to everybody for the response. As Richard said, the community is amazing. How often and you know, how regularly, in fact, racing community, and not just racing community, all equine sport communities support the activities that you know, that arise, and there's many of them, and sometimes there's the emergencies and so forth. So thanks to everybody. Should mention, as we look at some of the weekend action, got to mention that Mike Stidham is going to join us after Allen. And, of course, Stidham sending out Proxy to win the Oaklawn Handicap on Saturday under Joel Rosario. Everybody who called Ron Anderson, actually, Saturday. Everybody who asked Ron to ride their horse in a stake to take the call. Joel Rosario sweeps the three stakes. And all three races were exciting, to say the least. And Red Route won, winning the Bathhouse Row in thrilling fashion. He looked like a chicken in a pot at the eighth pole. And Rosario gets up. Merlaza, how about Merlaza in that Valley of the Vapors? And Merlaza, we actually have to talk about that. I put up a tweet last night or yesterday afternoon about that spot, because Pink Ace, the Nevada Litvin Mitch Merle, 46-1 shot, the longest shot on the board by a wide margin, ran a whale of a race in just her second start. And on Thoroughgraph, she had run an 8 in that debut. And that made her very competitive with the obvious players in here. I mean, obviously the horse to beat was going to be Merlaza, and she went off 3-5. But then you had Exponential Star, who we thought was, you know, sort of the interesting next option. I liked her way more than Classy Bridget. And who was the third? I think Santa Fe Gold. Yeah, the Calhoun. I put the Calhoun fourth was the other horse that I used in trying to basically exclude one of the favorites, in this case, Classy Bridget. So anyway, Pink Ace just ran a fabulous race in her second career start and just gets nailed because Rosario basically was carrying them to the wire. 3-for-3 in the three stakes Saturday. Proxy for Godolphin wins the Oaklawn Handicap. And Red Route 1, Steve Asmussen, his lock of the week. and he said he'd be very surprised if Red Route 1 lost in that spot when we talked to Steve last week. And he came close to being surprised. But that's not that no one's going to. Yeah, you can't turn back the clock. So Asmussen with another, this was just $6, but it's better than a sharp stick in the eye, as they say. And then also, didn't we get we had Arno Delacour with the mint horse, with the after eight horse, also paid a little under $7, but That was another nice delivery to help you build your bankroll ahead, looking ahead to Derby and Oaks. There were some I yesterday morning as I was reviewing everything, some fabulous scores, some unbelievable scores. And I got to reach out and bring some people in. We got a lot. It's going to be a fun week, actually. Don't forget, tomorrow is the release on the Hall of Fame. So at 11 o'clock over these airwaves, the big reveal, who is going to be a Hall of Famer. But meanwhile, today, let's get back with just a couple of minutes before I reach out for Alan. Michael Stidham in this hour. We'll catch up with Mike. Haven't talked to him. Mig, hour two. I mentioned Mark Board and Brandon Rice. John White, of course, Darren Rogers, Mike Welch with the weekend Derby Oaks work report. Quiet morning yesterday. Today, just Disarm out there. And actually, I thought Disarm did more than you usually would see. I mean, this is a horse that just ran. Just ran 2 weeks ago, right? Or not even 2 weeks ago, a week ago in the Lexington. And yet, you know, you'd expect an Asmussen trainee like that to go in 102. Actually went in a minute flat and galloped way out deep onto the backstretch. I put a little video up got the first look at a few horses like Continue R and Derma Sadakaki. We'll let Mike bring you up to speed on what he saw and what he was impressed with or not so impressed with. So we'll do that, of course, the weekend recap. Maybe we'll catch Kevin, too, when he comes by. Right now he's on the backstretch getting Derby Oaks notebook quotes. All right? And so as we go to reach for Alan Foreman, I will mention the one set of news yesterday. No surprise, Chad Brown making the decision with the Rodeo Creek racing people, the Capex. They are going to bypass Derby in favor of a Preakness start. And let's be honest, Chad has made hay while the crab cakes cook when it comes to bypassing derbies in favor of Preaknesses. So Blazing Sevens gets Jace's Road back into the Derby field. Had been pushed out by Disarm's point gathering last week. And now back in the field for Brad Cox. And I haven't seen anything, but I'm guessing that Florent Giroux ends up with that mount, probably, right? We'll see. And if that happens, I imagine that Sun Thunder, who looked good out there today for McPeak, that Brian Hernandez Jr., because Brian Hernandez and Giroux had ridden Sun Thunder, so maybe this Jace's Road scenario drops a couple more shoes in terms of assignments. But right now, the two horses that are without rider assignments, Mage for Gustavo Delgado, who's, I can tell you already, seems like a buzz horse without even being here, and King's Barnes, which is not unusual. Todd Pletcher very frequently has a tendency to wait in case somebody drops out, and he can get his hands on, you know, either one of his regular riders, should that happen, or some other A-list rider. But for right now, things are pretty sedate when it comes to concerns and, you know, physical issues. Yesterday, apparently, with Mike Willman on LA on Thoroughbred LA, John Sheriffs says that Skinner will fly here, and the Searings, if they can get in with Skinner, who is sitting in the on-deck circle, if they can get in with Skinner, they're running. They absolutely want to run. And Sheriffs, who's not a Lily Gilder by trade, is thrilled with Skinner's progress out of the Santa Anita Derby. And if Skinner gets in this race, he is an interesting participant, because it feels like he's going forward in just that manner that John Sheriffs can extract from his charges. So very interesting. And who knows? The next time we talk to John Sheriffs, he may be a Hall of Famer, because, of course, he is one of the conditioners up for induction into the Hall. We'll know tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So there's the quick update on the leaderboard and things. Skinner, Cyclone Mischief, Major Dude, Mandarin Hero, King Russell are the only five horses still under consideration, should anybody else drop out. And, of course, Chad also, and Peter Brandt, bypassing the Oaks with Shitabooty. And Shitabooty will look to the Acorn and get back around one turn, which also makes some sense, and that gets the two-year-old champion, Wonder Wheel, happy for the Greens, for Len and John and family, Lois and everybody, and Cassie, the biggest earner, $1.5 million in earnings. Wonder Wheel will get into the Oaks, and that still leaves some very prominent fillies, Punch Bowl, Hoosier Filly, Julia Shining, and Taxed on the outside looking in. Let's look outside and reach for Alan Foreman and We will deal with the situation, the difficult. There's no other way to characterize it. It is a harrowing and difficult situation that they are facing in Maryland. And Allen is up for challenges. I don't know if he wants them, if he wants them as daunting as these are. Allen Foreman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I'm not trying to be flippant, because this is too serious of a situation, and I gave a thumbnail of it earlier in anticipation of your visit. Two conflicting versions of where things are, one from the Maryland Jockey Club and one by the Maryland Horsemen, and you're the go-between. Where do things stand, and your thoughts, if you would?
Well, I'm not sure where you are with respect to conflicting versions, but both the MTHA and the Maryland Jockey Club Strona Group reached an agreement late yesterday to allow John Passero, who was the former track superintendent here in Maryland during the DeFrancis era, and who is widely respected as one of the best track superintendents, I think, internationally, and someone that the horsemen have just complete trust and confidence in, to come in. And I believe he's at the track this morning. In fact, I would have preferred that Tim Keefe, who's really been the leader here, to have been on your show this morning, but I suspect Tim is at the track with John, and John is coming in as acting superintendent and will be here. He's familiar with these tracks. I think he believes that he can identify the problems and fix them, and he will continue to oversee them through the summer to ensure that that we're running smoothly and that this track surface is what it should be. And I'm referring to the dirt surface.
Allen, the dirt surface has been worked on repeatedly over the last 3-4 years, and there's been one spot after another that has proven to be problematic. Some things came out from between Tim's extensive letter and some other conversations and coverage of the issue over the weekend, that last year it was acknowledged by the MJC that the entire dirt surface needed to be overhauled. Obviously Passero will make some determination, but how about a timeline for what has gone on this front and why things haven't been rectified before now?
Well, it's gone on for too long. And at the last time that there were what I would call significant concerns about the dirt course, if you remember, I think it was 2 years ago, the Maryland Jockey Club closed the Laurel track and rebuilt the cushion, put a new cushion on, made other repairs to the racetrack. We moved racing to Pimlico to allow that to happen, and the sense was that would be the fix, and as it turns out, it was not the fix. And there are, I think, differing views about issues with the base, issues with the cushion, the material that was put on the track, maintenance procedures. Whatever it is, we continue in a situation that, as I've said, is not sustainable. It's not tenable. In conjunction with that, and in conjunction with the redevelopment plan of Laurel and Pimlico, the Maryland Stadium Authority on its own did an assessment of the Laurel surface, and the Stadium Authority had concluded that partial replacement probably was not in the best interest of the long-term plans, and that a complete replacement would be required. And the MTHA took the same position. Maryland Jockey Club disagreed with that, and so that issue festered and is reflected, quite frankly, in the September 30, 2022 report to the Maryland legislative leadership on the project, and in particular the racing surface at Laurel. the Maryland Jockey Club had talked to the state. The state authority didn't, quite frankly, want to even get involved with the Laurel surface unless there was more extensive study done and the surface ultimately it would be concluded to have to be rebuilt. The Maryland Jockey Club finally agreed prior to the issuance of that report that the best long-term plan for the racing surface would be to replace it. Now, there are those who disagree that it needs to be completely redone and that there are fixes that can be made that can solve the problem. And that's going to have to get resolved. I think John coming in, John Passero, will help us to get to the answer. Stadium Authority has its engineers and their views. And with this newly created Racetrack Operating Authority, and by the way, the governor is signing that bill this afternoon, I think the authority will now, in conjunction with the Stadium Authority and the horsemen, study that issue extensively and make a determination. At the end of the day, if the redevelopment plan going forward does not include Laurel in the long-term future of Maryland racing, it makes no sense to replace the surface if it can be maintained in a safe manner that eliminates the problems we've been having. And that, again, is what we'll have to look at, because ultimately, if we move from that facility, you're going to get a new dirt surface. Well, you're certainly going to get a new dirt surface at the new Pimlico, but if we build a training facility, it's going to get a new dirt surface also, and that will eliminate these difficulties. But it's certainly a vexing problem. I think the good news from the horseman's perspective is the person that they want to come in. And if John comes in and says, the track's okay, folks, I'm making some changes, you're safe to go back on there, they'll accept that. They'll accept John's word on this. And so I think we're in a better place, certainly this morning, than we've been over the last few weeks.
Well, good. All right. I mean, that... It seemed like there was real acrimony for, you know, multiple days, starting with, you know, some of the way in which the horsemen were being, I won't say excluded from conversation, but it seemed as if, you know, they weren't being actively involved. From management's side.
No, look. I have to say, first of all, that my hat's off to Aiden O'Brien. Aiden Butler, who did reach out to Tim Keefe yesterday and said, you know, this really is this isn't right. That we should not be going before the Racing Commission. That would be a very ugly hearing over safety issues. And what do we need to do to resolve it? So hats off to Aiden for recognizing that and kickstarting the conversation that led to the agreement last night. Mike Rogers at Maryland Jockey Club has been very cooperative, very accessible. Emotions have gotten very high. I still shake my head as to how it was allowed to get to this point. You know, Steve, this is my wheelhouse. I was involved in the investigation of the fatalities at Aqueduct a decade ago when Governor Cuomo asked us to study what had happened and to make recommendations. And it was as much a learning experience for me as having to issue recommendations. And one of the things that I've learned, and learned it very much from Scott Palmer, is that when you see clusters of injuries, when you see the word cluster is key. When you see a cluster of fatalities, it's a big red flag. And we do that in our Mid-Atlantic strategic plan. We talk about red flags. And so there have been red flags here. And when you see a red flag, everybody should, it's a call to action. And clearly, it's not so much that we ignored the red flags, but whatever was going on there wasn't working. But when you had the kind of day we had last Thursday, you just simply had to stop and regroup and take a fresh look. And emotions were high. I didn't like what I was seeing, and I'm delighted that cooler heads prevail. The Racing Commission had made very clear they were not going to allow Laurel to reopen until we were all satisfied that this situation was being addressed, was under control, and that somebody independently was going to make a determination that the track was safe going forward. And that's precisely what's happening now.
Well, then good. Good.
And by the way, while I give Aiden and Mike Rogers credit for they have been part of the dialogue, Tim Keefe has been unbelievable. I mean, this is one great horseman and one great representative of the horsemen. You know, Tim is out there every day. He's passionate. And you know, I hated getting the calls in the morning from Tim, who was standing on the track at Laurel during training with a horse that needed to be euthanized. It was the worst moment for everybody. And he wasn't going to let go of this issue until things were made right. So hats off to Tim Keefe. And I think the horsemen universally praise him for the work he's done here.
Alan, in terms of administration of safety protocols, and it seemed like one of the challenges here, and one of the things at odds. This is a scenario that we've seen elsewhere, including California. The tendency to essentially, you know, blame horsemen for first and ask questions later. And I mean that's got to stop at some point. It's nice that a spirit of cooperation was forged last night, but the initial approach to this was horsemen are inept and it's their doing, and the track was fine. I mean, it just seemed like a preposterous way to start the whole process.
Well, the fact that debate would even occur in public would, in my opinion, have been not only unseemly, but it would have threatened the industry here. And it would have threatened the industry nationally. I cannot begin to tell you how many phone calls I received from folks around the country that this is, are we looking at another Santa Anita? This is going to do damage to all of us. And so this notion that, folks, it's not the racing circus, it's the horsemen, is just, I mean, that's the fuel for the fire. And it wouldn't fly. Look, we in Maryland, I think, have been national leaders on safety and welfare protocols. We all were sobered up by what happened at Santa Anita, and we all needed to implement changes, as we've been doing for the past decade, to make our tracks safer and to implement medication and veterinary examination and all the other protocols that, quite frankly, are now part of HISA. I mean, the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan is built into HISA. And the Astronic Group in their press release said, by the way, there's nothing wrong with our track. Our fatality rate is 1.44 per thousand, at or below the national average. So, you know, what are you all talking about here? But that doesn't tell the story. It never tells the story. We've made remarkable progress, both nationally, clearly in the Mid-Atlantic, and clearly in Maryland. Implementing the protocols from the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan and what's required by HISA. Your goal is to get to zero, and you're never going to get to zero. But it doesn't tell the story. In our case, it wasn't just the cluster of fatalities that occurred over the past 2 weeks, five fatalities, which is not something that we're used to experiencing and no one should tolerate. But the morning training was the real problem. The problem with the surface basically was happening in the morning. And what you don't see in the statistics are horses that are injured, horses that are sent to our veterinary hospitals, horses that suffer injuries that requires them to be taken out of training. And You know, you don't see in the statistics the calls from angry owners about the condition of their horses who have been training there and wanting to take them elsewhere. So it's fine to come in and try to argue that, well, that horse that broke down in the fourth race on Thursday had pre-existing injuries. A lot of these horses have pre-existing injuries. That doesn't mean that they're not fit to race. But interestingly, at Laurel, you not only have the equine medical director and the state team, but following Santa Anita, the Astronic Group requested that they be permitted to bring their own team in as kind of a second set of eyes, and particularly in the morning, and they've been out there. So if these horses are going out and have passed scrutiny through two veterinary teams, plus get to the starting gate, you wonder whether that argument really makes any sense when you know there are problems with the racing service. So at this point, it doesn't make sense to be pointing fingers. It makes sense to... The simple request from the horseman was, we have an independent expert we trust that we'd like to come in and have him look at the track. Let us do it. And, you know, when the original answer was no, we were all mystified. So, fortunately, cooler heads prevailed. And John's in there, and hopefully sometime today we'll get a sense of what's going on.
Very good. And for now, the racing office left the entries open from yesterday, hoping to put a card together for Friday. And, of course, you had a slate of stakes that were scuttled on Saturday. So they've got to be reworked. I mean, why wouldn't starting up at Pimlico a few weeks early make sense, Alan, as an immediate...
I can't answer the question, Steve. It just seems to be... a smart move. I mean, Pimlico, certainly now, well, we trade around there, but they certainly have to get ready for the Preakness meet, which is only a couple of weeks away. It would seem to make sense, but, I guess that's above my pay grade. I didn't make that decision. The horseman did a request that we move over to Pimlico. And if John Passero finds this morning that there are repairs that need to be made that are going to take considerable time, then I think we will move over to Pimlico. But that decision has not yet been made. And if, in fact, he can make adjustments and we can stay at Laurel, I think it's probably what the Maryland Jockey Club would prefer. Well, like I will tell you, we are not going to open for racing unless John Passero says that it is okay to do so. We simply can't afford to have another mishap, and that puts a lot of burden on John, but I can't think of anybody better than John to make that call.
Well, and of course, the request by the horseman to have John engaged, it's not in any way any kind of indictment on Dennis Moore, who is as respected as there is. What Passero offers is a real understanding of the ambient conditions, in Anne Arundel and Baltimore County, and those two facilities, those two surfaces. So he's got an institutional understanding of how those surfaces perform at different times of the year, and in terms of moisture and humidity and so forth. So I mean, in terms of proximity and comprehension of what he's looking at with that surface, those surfaces, that speaks for itself.
Right. I absolutely not an indictment of Dennis Moore, who's very highly regarded. But tracks in California are not like the tracks in Maryland.
Yeah.
And Glenn Kozak, who is highly respected and considered one of the best superintendents in the country, he's an IRS vice president for racing, and he's the track superintendent. We've had conversations, and you have to know and understand the uniqueness of the Mid-Atlantic, and particularly Maryland, in getting materials and doing it right. And that's what John's expertise is. That's what he does. That's what he's known for. So, hopeful that we'll get a good report from John, that he'll get done whatever needs to get done, and we'll go from there.
Excellent. All right. Well, we will not We will not discuss other aspects. This was the immediate concern. We are just, four weeks away from the Alan Foreman from high atop Pimlico meeting conclave conversation. So hopefully I don't have to talk to you until then.
All right. Things are changing on a dime here. We could hang up in 5 minutes from now. Something could be different. That's how it is as of 9:45 a.m. on Monday morning.
Alan Foreman.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Alan. Alan Foreman, everybody. And there's your up to the minute. And that's great that Passero kind of lets some of the tension out of what was a pressure cooker the previous 72 hours. All right, let me bring Mike Stidham, roll right in, and we can that lifts the mood, I got to tell you, because there was, I mean, you read the anxiety and the tension in Tim Keefe's letter. you could tell, I mean, how desperate, essentially, the horsemen felt over where things stood. So we'll wait for what happens next, essentially, and what Frank Passero, what he comes up with in terms of the surface and what they have to do to get Laurel set. Here's Mike Stidham joining us, and certainly, Mike, after spending a winter in New Orleans where the turf course was an issue, can appreciate the situation in Maryland. Michael, was I correct in assuming that is the first $1 million race that you have sent a horse out to win? Proxy in the Oaklawn Handicap Saturday. Congratulations.
Yeah, yes, it was, Steve, and it was pretty exciting. Old Proxy makes things a nail-biting experience the way he runs his races. But yeah, that was the first million, and it was great to win it.
Well, he certainly picked the right time. I mean, considering he's a horse that, you know, that makes things exciting. He's already a grade one winner, and of course, with the pedigree that he's got, he's going to go on to a stud career. But in the meantime, Michael, this was a big effort for him. It's his second, from a speed figure standpoint, it's his second biggest triple digit fig, a 103 buyer, and it feels like he's putting together a significant season, especially after that good try in the big cap, and knowing that the Breeders' Cup Classic is going to be back at Santa Anita at the end of the year.
No, I mean, that was our intentions when we sent him out there, all the way out to Santa Anita for the Santa Anita Handicap. We had that in mind, that hoping that he would handle that racetrack well, and he did. Because the ultimate goal is to be around at the end of the year for the Breeders' Cup. So we feel like, you know, we got a little bit of a leg up on that, and we're hoping that as he progresses through the year and we run him a few more times leading up to the Breeders' Cup, that he continues to mature mentally, because that's always been Proxy's biggest drawback, was he's got a tremendous amount of ability, but mentally he's just kind of quirky about the way he runs and the way he kind of picks different spots during a race where he just kind of drops out of it, loses interest, and then a rider like Joel Rosario has been able to ride him a few times, and he's understanding his quirks, and that he doesn't really like a lot of dirt in his face, and everybody sort of criticized him for what's he doing out there in the middle of the racetrack. Well, he's out in the middle of the racetrack because he doesn't run into the dirt well. So you give up one thing to gain another, and Joel has figured that out with it. So it's the right way to go.
Well, and what's notable actually, because I heard you talking to Nancy Holtis after the race about that, and it's not insignificant that in three of his last five starts, going back to the Blame last June, that he drew the rail. And yet he was able to win the Clark from the rail, but that was a six-horse field.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Clark didn't have a lot of speed. I mean, I think the internal fractions were close to 48 for the half, and he was able to break, get a little position, and sit off of the leader that day pretty close to the pace. But when they go fast, like, say, for example, the Pegasus, where he drew the rail, there was a ton of speed in the race, speed bias racetrack. He got stuck down there and couldn't get out from behind the dirt. The only time he made any kind of a run was when they turned for home and he was able to swing out in the middle of the racetrack. And he was the only horse that was making up any ground at the end, and he wound up fifth that day. But, you know, that's where having a rider like Rosario is huge, because he knows the horse well now.
You know, I'm looking at the PPs. Excuse me. He, you know, it's not as if he. And I'll take that back. Let me form this differently. I was going to say, it's not as if he has improved by leaps and bounds as he's reached maturity. In fact, Michael, it seems like he's been essentially the same horse at 3, 4, and now 5. So it's a question of extracting the right trip from him and sort of cajoling him into performances.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. And we're talking about a difference of, you know, a length and less than a length between being second or third in these races and actually winning them. And as you can see now, you know, he's won the Clark and he won the Oaklawn Handicap, you know, by very small margins. But those were the same kind of races he was getting beat by small margins. So it is just a matter of a very small amount of distance that he's making up now, because, you know, he's being ridden the way he needs to be ridden. And just, I think, mentally just kind of maturing and figuring it out a little bit more.
Have you had a horse like this before?
I honestly can say that I haven't. He's been one of the most pleasurable horses to have in the barn, but one of the more frustrating horses too. So I haven't really had one like this that has that much talent, but just is so quirky about, you know, the running of a race.
Well, and it seems the one thing that we—I mean, there was only one incident, but you kind of expect he does not like a wet track.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were hoping that the rain, you know, ended when it did, because it was a mess there on Thursday when we arrived. It rained so hard, and they had washouts on the track. They were filling washouts with dump trucks full of dirt and whatnot. So it was great that ended, and we had a nice, a beautiful day and fast track for the race.
I've already mentioned that Joel Rosario had won all three stakes on Saturday. The Derby actually officially is in place, because Gary Yount, the Derby note taker to the stars, has arrived at Churchill. you know, everybody knows Gary. 6 decades worth of turf publicity under his belt. Looking at last year's schedule, I mean, what did you learn? And is he on his way back to Churchill now? Number one.
So Proxy arrived this morning at Keeneland.
Keeneland.
He's back to Keeneland.
Yeah.
Yep. And then he'll be leaving at end of the week for to go to Fairhill.
Okay. So what do you anticipate? I mean, obviously we're working back from the Breeders' Cup Classic. So how many, 2-3 more starts?
You know, I would say if he's doing well and everything's going the way we hope it will go, we're probably looking at maybe 3 races between here and the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, the most likely next one would be the Stephen Foster.
Yeah.
It's a grade one. It's a win and you're in. It's, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to go there. And then we'd be looking at probably Saratoga
the Whitney,
after that.
The Whitney, yep, for sure.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
And then maybe the Woodward. And he's not run. Has he not run in New York at all?
No, I don't. You know what? I don't think he has.
No, I don't think he has either.
No. So we'll, but the one thing, the other good thing about him is he doesn't seem to need a certain type of racetrack. He seems to run well everywhere, you know, he's gone. So he's handled Churchill, he's handled the fairgrounds, and now Oaklawn. So Santa Anita, I mean, everywhere we've taken him, he usually runs his race. The only place that he struggled a little bit, like I said, was Gulfstream, which was more of a speed bias and stuck down on the inside.
Well, exciting to win a $1 million race. His earnings careening up to $1.7 million. And as I said, he's a Tappet. He's out of the wonderful Panty Raid. And he's going to get a chance, obviously, to stand stud. But the resume can continue to grow now with 3 triple-digit buyers added to his resume. It's not so bad.
Yeah, it's a good sign when he arrives and arrives back at Keeneland in about a half an hour. Dan Pride is walking up to the barn. You know that's a good sign for a future stallion prospect.
I love it.
Dan was checking to make sure he made it back safely.
I love it. I love it. Wow. You know, and for you, I should mention, because I just happened to look at this, first graded stake win of the year, and it now makes 15 straight seasons you've won at least one grade one, or graded stake.
Graded stake, right. Well, it's always something that every trainer, you know, is hoping to do. And, you know, as I always say, the faster these horses run that I get, you know, the smarter I look. So I hope they keep doing it.
Well, let's catch up on a couple of other potential players. And you mentioned the barn back at Fair Hill, and I'm going to imagine that the Pennsylvania bred gun collector for the Jacksons, the gun runner colt that just broke the maiden. What's next for him?
Well, he's a PA bred, so you know, most likely we'll be running him back in a PA bred 1X, and then hopefully from there, you know, as he develops, we'll be looking at some black type races for him. But he just breezed the other day. He's doing well out of his last race, so we're excited about getting him back too.
Excellent.
Doing very well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What about Pixelate? What coming out of the fairgrounds?
So Pixelate is, we gave him a little break after the fairgrounds, and we're probably looking at him coming in, you know, sometime maybe in probably June or July, coming back in. So we gave him a little breather.
Very good. And talk about, obviously, a few more days left at Keeneland, and then we're going to kick off at Churchill. But you're positioned to run a lot of places. Talk about what lies ahead here the next couple of weeks.
Well, we've got a horse named Catnip in on Wednesday at Keeneland in the 1X on the turf. And he's a half-brother to Princess Grace.
Yeah.
And Princess Grace was sold last year for $1.7 million. She went to Australia, and she just won a grade three over in Australia. So she's looking like she's going to add to her earnings. She was already up to $1.4 million when she left my barn. And Susan and John Moore own the dam masquerade, and so they're rooting for her to continue, and she could possibly be running in some grade ones over in Australia. So
very
pretty exciting.
Oh, that's very cool.
And then Susan's got a gunrunner yearling, actually a gunrunner weanling out of masquerade coming up.
This one, Catnip, though, is this is a kitten's joy, and he's gelded, so he's going to be around.
He is, and he's doing well on the comeback, so I think he's in a pretty live spot here on Wednesday.
Well, I'm just looking at the PPs. You thought enough of him off the maiden win at Colonial.
Yeah.
You brought him right back 4 weeks later in the Virginia Derby, and he didn't run badly.
Yeah, but since he's gelded, he's got a little different attitude. He was, he had a little bit of a strong-headed attitude before we gelded him, and now he's a little more willing to do what we're asking him to do. So I'm hoping for, some big improvement in him now that he's coming back from his gelding.
Excellent. And you got 3 5-furlong drills into him to get him ready for this comebacker. Catnip coming up at Wednesday at Keeneland in the 4th. And Brian Hernandez Jr. Is going to ride. Let me ask you one question. I mean, I referenced the fairgrounds turf. I can tell you, I was there last week for Tina's vacation, and I broadcast from the fairgrounds, and the turf looks fabulous for the Jazz and Heritage Festival.
Oh yeah, no, they believe me. The Churchill Downs has the turf in great shape. Actually, Hillary and I are going to go back for our first Jazz Fest for a couple of days, and we're going to get to trot around on a perfect turf course. Unfortunately, it wasn't so perfect during the meet.
One thing to watch for, and it's interesting, the horses coming out of fairgrounds, and I know Marcus Hirsch made the point the other day that they were struggling a little bit at Keeneland. That actually got some help from Brendan Walsh on Saturday, but did it throw you off? I mean, not being able. I mean, how are your turf horses? Are they behind a start?
It was horrible, and I expressed my feelings to the management at Churchill. The fact that as horsemen, we all ship down there with intentions of a normal fairgrounds meet, which was full of turf racing and good turf racing. And we get down there and find out what they already knew before we got there, that there wasn't going to be a turf course, at least for the first 6 weeks. And, it sent everybody, in different directions. We had to send 15 horses to Turfway for the meet after shipping all the way to the fairgrounds and shipping back to Turfway. And, a few of the horses, turf horses, we turned them out. So it was an expensive mistake for the horsemen made by Churchill Downs, and I don't think it was handled very well, and I expressed my feelings about it.
Well, I've got it since we're sending you back to NOLA for the Jazz Fest. Have you did you say you guys have never been?
No, we've had homes. Hillary and I have both had homes there for 25 years, and we've always been so busy this time of the year, never been able to go back for Jazz Fest. My daughters go there every year, but this will be our first time, and so we're excited to go back. Yeah.
Well, my first trips to the fairgrounds were for Jazz and Heritage Festival back in the 90s. I saw two in 3 years, and it's you're going to love it. We ended up we had no idea last week that we were going to be there for, or this is actually the week before last, because I was home last week, but we didn't know anything about that French Quarter Festival.
Yeah,
and we were staying in the Pontalba, the Bacek pa- palace, essentially, overlooking Jackson Square. And what an experience that was. I mean, that's a free festival for everybody. It's fabulous.
It really is. It's a great time. And, the top singing groups and artists are there. I'm a big fan of Kenny Loggins from back in the 70s when I was growing up in Miami, and Kenny Loggins is going to be at the Jazz Fest the weekend we're there for his, like, I think his final appearance. So
really,
we're going back to watch that, and we're anxious to have some fun.
Well, I think I may have one push for you that I'm going to throw at you, because I'm always asking you about your favorites, and you've given us, well, of course, Upper Line and et cetera. We had a nice, Tina and I put together a pretty nice string with, on Easter night, we ate at Galatoire, and then we were out to see Frank Brightson the couple nights later. And then not only did I get her back to Mr. John's the night before we left, but then, rather than have dessert there, I hustled her over to Brennan's for her first Brennan's Bananas Foster.
Oh my God!
So
beautiful.
We had a fabulous about as great a trifecta. But have you guys been to Bakery Bar on Asuncion? Is it on Asuncion?
We have not been there, but. Right. We'll take the recommendation.
Bakery Bar. And actually, this is a Michael Bacik push. He's not been there either, but somebody had told him, been pushing him to go. So Tina and I went. We walked straight through the warehouse district,
right.
and it's right under the thruway, right under the highway. And the Doberge cake is the big push, but you got to have this potato dish, Michael. They bring this, it's called basura patatas. They bring out a little like a big ramekin, a big metal tin, and they tap on it, and then they lift it, and it's diced home fried potatoes with caramelized onion, bacon, and beer cheese.
Oh my God.
It is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
There goes the diet.
Forget, well, listen.
Joubert's cake with the potatoes.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Well, we enjoyed the Joubert, but the potato was the revelation. So anyway, Bakery Bar.
Well, there you go.
All right. Well, Michael.
We'll try it.
I love it. Congratulations to you, Godolphin, Joel on an amazing day, obviously. And we'll see you here when you get back. I'm at Churchill now.
We'll be there. All right. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on, as always.
A lot of fun. My pleasure. Mike Stidham, everybody, and so much fun. He does such a great job. And what an interesting horse, right, the proxy. And it's funny because he was running, if you look, we're doing all this Thorograph work. He's running essentially a tight pattern. It's not like he's, suddenly, getting a lot faster as a maturing horse. He's like a snooker horse. I think I just coined a phrase. He's like a three-bumper kind of a horse that has to be ridden cleverly to extract the best result. And there's no telling how many races this horse could have won had he been a little. Here, let me turn back. Well, he got beat. A zop by Stiletto Boy, and that would have been a nice win, but we certainly wouldn't want to take that away from Ed Mosier and his brother. He won the Clark, got beat by five in the Foster, got beat by a length in the Blame, going back to his three-year-old year. Midnight Bourbon beat him a length in the LeCompte, and Mandaloon beat him a length and a quarter in the Risen Star. And then he didn't. He kind of had a wide trip and never really impacted the Louisiana Derby at all. And then he caught Slop in the Lexington, and he was obviously, if he's a horse that doesn't like dirt in his face, he's not going to like mud either in his face. Joel's now ridden him to his two biggest wins, arguably. Luis Saez, Dynamic One beat him in the Blame. Olympiad beat him two lengths last year in the New Orleans. King Fury, Hot Rod Charlie, Mandaloon, and Midnight Bourbon. So, I mean, he faced the best of his generation as a three-year-old. A funny horse. The Dam, well, yeah, remember, everybody remembers Panty, right? Nice. Last Samurai was, Christian Torres was trying to come up inside. That wasn't gonna work. Stiletto Boy ran a funny race. It looked like he was going to fade away, and then DeSormo, you know, got him to persevere. Got beat head and a nose. Charge It loomed and was wide. And I don't know if what Todd says. I don't know if the blinkers did much for him there or not. And Classic Causeway, we keep reiterating. Turn him back on the dirt, Kenny. Freddie Moe, the one and only Moskowitz, saying, no wonder the scale was broken last week. I'm back down. I trimmed back, even though I stopped at Schwabel's for, I had beef on Weck at Schwabel's Friday night, and stopped at Country Made for ice cream on Saturday. Banana. I should put that picture up. Very nice picture. It's a hell of a cone, too. Girl, get one scoop, and she gives me like a half a pound of ice cream. Rich Migliori next, and then we'll go to Ocala. Stay with us. We're live at the Downs.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania bread stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 17th.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays